Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 86. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, well-known film producer and author, John DeGraff. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. You may know John DeGraff as the producer of the award-winning film Affluenza, its sequel Escape from Affluenza, and its book Affluenza, the All-Consuming Epidemic. The recent enhanced edition is Affluenza, How Overconsumption is Killing Us and How to Fight Back. The term affluenza has now been accepted into American vernacular to mean overconsumption. More recently, he has co-authored What's the Economy For Anyway? Why It's Time to Stop Chasing Growth and Start Pursuing Happiness. And Take Back Your Time, Fighting Overwork and Time Poverty in America. He founded Take Back Your Time Day and the Global Happiness Initiative. John and I have talked before, a two-parter on the Common Good podcast and once on Simple Living Works podcast. In those episodes, we've covered Affluenza, Take Back Your Time Day, and the Happiness Initiative, and his books. Links to those episodes are given in the show notes. John has been named a founding member of the Simple Living Works Champions of Simple Living. See a link to his profile in the show notes. John is active on social media and writes regularly for several publications such as Truth Out and Earth Island Journal. He serves on the board of directors of Earth Island Institute, publisher of the Earth Island Journal. He also has several pieces on the Simple Living Works site, on the featured writers page, and a series of Lenten sermons in the collection Worship Alternatives. See the links in the show notes. In this episode, we talk about several of his recent articles, especially those related to America's national parks. If you think, oh boy, another self-congratulatory piece about how our parks are America's greatest idea, well, stay tuned. John has some vital information and perspectives on dangers to these treasures. We'll begin with his The Backpacking Theory of Life. Here again, if you think this is going to be a sentimental coming-of-age piece, you will be surprised. John's early experiences with nature have been life-transformative. He is so passionate about conservation that an award has been named for him at the annual Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival. A brief disclaimer. Our daughter has served as park ranger in the Grand Canyon for some 10 years, so we're very fond and protective of our parks. She has written about that experience for Simple Living Works. See the link in the show notes. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book, scheduled for release February 14th, yes, that's Valentine's Day, has much to say about how critical our exposure to the natural world is in preservation of life on Earth. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read an advanced copy, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about Volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and Volume 2 on this podcast. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. Now here's my conversation with John. John, I understand that you've had some really earth and life-changing experiences as a child that gives you a real feeling about nature and about conservation. So begin with telling us about those life-changing experiences.
Absolutely. You know, my father passed away in November at the age of 95. And when that happens, you think a lot about, you know, the memories of what was the key experiences together. And for me, those had to do with my dad taking me backpacking in California, where I grew up when I was a kid, and primarily to Yosemite National Park. And we did one backpacking trip first when I was 11 years old. I was, you know, completely exhausted from it, but it was a great experience for me. Did another when I was 12 to a lake, which has really become my favorite place for the rest of my life. I took my own son there when he was 12. And going to those places and also reading the work of John Muir, whom my dad introduced me to also when I was a boy, it just made me really love these wild places that we've set aside and consider the importance of the fact that we've done that for posterity, that people did that in the case of Yosemite way back in 1864, for example. And the backpacking not only taught me to love these wild places, but it also taught me some lessons about what's important in life. I call that the backpacking theory of life. And the lessons really are about balance, that you really have to have balance and moderation in life. As a backpacker, you may want to carry a bunch of stuff because you'd like to have it in camp when you're there, but the more you carry, the worse you're going to pay for it on the trip because it's heavy. And so you have to figure out what are the essential things to take, you know, what are the lighter things that I can take, and that makes a big, big difference. And I think that particular lesson has stuck with me throughout my life. What is important? What is balance? What is frugality? What can you do without? And I've understood that you don't need a lot to be happy. On the backpacking trip, I had the beauty of nature and the connection with friends and relationships, the fresh air, all of those kind of things, and not a lot of stuff, and I was deliciously happy, and that has continued for me and has affected all of my thinking about consumerism, materialism, and these things. So I think that backpacking really teaches you that. It's a lesson everybody needs to learn personally, but I also believe it's a lesson we need to learn as a country. I think of us as a country with a small person with a very enormous backpack of stuff pulling us backwards.
Now, John, you make in a recent article a proposal, Finding Time for Our Parks. Now, that's a very tame name, but you put out some really interesting statistics, and you make some really strong suggestions of what you mean by finding time for our parks.
Well, this is, I did this. I wrote this article for the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service, which was this past year. August 25th was that anniversary. And, of course, the parks mean very, very much to me. And Americans love the parks, no question about it. 307 million Americans visited. There were 307 million separate visits to our national parks in 2016, the largest number in history. But while more Americans were visiting the parks, they were spending less and less time there, hurrying either from park to park on a quick trip to try to see it all, or just, you know, not having the time and making very, very short visits to the closest park. So, for example, the average visitor to the Grand Canyon, that amazing spectacle in northern Arizona, spends 17 minutes actually looking at the canyon. I tell a story of a family that pulled up with their car to one of those turnoffs where you can get out and look at the Grand Canyon. And the father hopped out, slammed the door, said to the rest of the family, "Stay in the car, I'll get the shot." This is the sort of thing, even at Yosemite, my favorite park, I witnessed people coming to these turnouts where you have the most magnificent vistas of these 3,000-foot granite walls and 2,000-foot-tall waterfalls and just beautiful scenes that I could look all day at, and people will just drive by in the car and snap a few shots out the window. Or if they do stop, by the time they get to the viewpoint from the car, they already have their camera or their smartphone in front of their eyes, and they're snapping photos. They haven't even looked at the scene. Their first view of these magnificent landscapes is mediated through the lens. And the whole idea is to kind of capture and put on Instagram or Pinterest or something like that as many pictures as possible to prove that you've been there and done that and shot that. It's a shame, and it really means that we are not appreciating the value of these places, what they can do for our connection, for our appreciation of nature, for our exercise and health and all of those things. We're just kind of chalking up conquests in one park after another. And I think this bodes poorly for the future of our parks, because people who don't really love the parks will not be a constituency to protect them. And when the Congress people who want to get rid of our public lands in the western states start to do that, I'm afraid we won't have the fight to stop them.
So are you making a suggestion that there's an effort to privatize our parks and privatize our public lands?
Yes, and there certainly has been for some time, particularly in the western states. And we saw this with the whole event of the Bundy gang who took over the National Wildlife Reserve in Oregon last year, ended up not being prosecuted for this very illegal act, and we're arguing that all these public lands should be privatized. There are congresspeople in the West who want to do that. Now, President Trump has said he is not in favor of that, and we need to hold him to that. I think it's an important thing to say this is a promise you made, just like the promise you made not to cut Medicare and Social Security. You promised to keep our natural lands, even though I'm sure he won't add to them the way President Obama did in magnificent fashion. President Obama added more national monuments and more land to our public lands available to all of us than any president in history. But I think we've got to hold Trump's feet to the fire and say, you said you won't do this. Don't.
What do you say beyond that in your article, an immodest proposal, make America beautiful again?
Well, this is kind of a play on Trump's Make America Great Again, of course. And I think Trump's idea of greatness is that we should become sort of an enormous Las Vegas of artificial, vast wealth and show and display and Trump Towers and all of this. That's not my idea of great, and it's certainly not my idea of beautiful. It's an idea of how we have kind of uglified our country with strip developments and sprawl and all of those things. Instead, I think one thing that brings conservatives and liberals together is that we all do like to live in beautiful surroundings and appreciate beautiful spaces. My feeling is that conservatives, individuals, not necessarily politicians, but individuals, appreciate the national parks. And the thing that I've met them, you know, and I know that this is true, that they appreciate their flower gardens and the things they do to live in beauty. So it's something that we have in common. We need to look for those things that we have in common as ways that we can potentially move forward in a very troubling era that we're now entering. So I propose this idea, Make America Beautiful Again, as a campaign that progressives could use to push some of the things that matter to us. So, for example, in Kentucky and West Virginia and these coal mining areas where the coal is mining is not really coming back, and we don't want it to come back because if it does, it'll be a disaster for the climate. But those people, we need to have some sympathy for the fact that they love those places. They want to stay there. They're connected there for generations. They don't want to necessarily go to a community college and study information technology and then move to some city to do that. And I'm not sure we want them to, because I don't think we want to put all Americans to empty the countryside and send them all to cities. So what we ought to be doing instead is having a national program like the old CCC or the WPA that hires these former coal miners and gives them work restoring the mountaintops of Appalachia. If you look from the air at Kentucky and West Virginia, you will see that some 530 mountaintops have been completely sheared off to make strip mines for coal. Now, all of that is ugly from above. It's less ugly from down below where these people live. But if they could be hired, employed, to fill in those mountaintops, to put the soil back in and to plant trees and to eliminate the scars that otherwise would last for generations to come, I think that would be a great program to make America beautiful again, but also to provide employment. And I think we can do that in other parts of rural America where soil conservation needs to be improved and we're losing enormous amounts of topsoil. We can do it in Rust Belt cities, things that can be restored to to being more beautiful places. We see that in some of them. I've been to some of those cities where the communities together have been able to build bike paths and walkways and beautiful parks along their streams and other kinds of things that make those communities attractive. They could do more of that with federal help and other help. So I think a campaign to make America beautiful again is one that people would respond to, like they responded to Lady Bird Johnson's similar campaign in the 1960s, and something that would get us to see that, you know, government is not just this awful thing that it's been portrayed to be, but in fact government can do many things to enhance and improve our lives. So I encourage people to read that article because it's in a lot more detail. One thing that inspired me in that is thinking about the song America the Beautiful, which everybody loves, right wing, left wing, and so forth. In fact, they think it was even Rush Limbaugh who once proposed it should be our national anthem. I don't think Rush Limbaugh realized that America the Beautiful was actually written on the top of Pikes Peak, looking out east to the purple, to the waves of rain, and west to the purple mountains, by a woman named Catherine Lee Bates in 1893, who just happened to be not only a lesbian, but also a Christian socialist, and a very active one. And on the day Catherine Lee Bates penned America the Beautiful as a poem, she sent it to two of her friends, along with a letter that said, and I'm paraphrasing now, but this is very close to what she wrote, there are those who say that America should be great. And I'm thinking, obviously, of Trump here, but she said, there are those who think America should be great. But if America is great without being good, and if America is rich without having brotherhood, then we will go the way of all the previous empires of history. And I think that's a hugely important lesson, that we can beautify the country, we can bring people together, rural and urban. We're mad. Many of us on the left and on the progressive side are mad about what happened, and we're certainly mad that rural America voted so heavily for Trump. But we can't let that anger blind us from the steps we need to take to try to unify America around more progressive ideals.
Thank you so much for that encouragement, John. Before I say goodbye, I'd just like to ask you a little bit about the Earth Island Journal and what it's like to serve on the Earth Island Institute Board of Directors.
Absolutely. Well, Earth Island Institute was started by my conservation hero, David Brower, who was probably the most effective environmentalist of the 20th century and the heir to John Muir. He built the Sierra Club as an organization. He founded Friends of the Earth and later founded Earth Island Institute as an umbrella organization for literally dozens of small environmental groups that are taking on issues all over the world. The Earth Island, I'm on the board of that organization, so I get to see the great work that those people are doing literally all over the world. Now something like 65 separate projects. We incubate those projects, we help them along, and then many of them become bigger than we are, you know, and they split off and they do their own thing, but that's great to see. But Earth Island publishes a wonderful journal. I think it's very, very well done and has been going for quite a long time. So I encourage people to check it out at Earth Island. Just Google Earth Island Journal, look up earthisland.org. I'm proud to be working for that organization and with that organization and for all the things that it's doing to, you know, fight for our natural environment and our future, and justice in the environmental field as well, because we understand that it's poor communities and communities of color that often suffer the worst impacts of environmental degradation.
Including oil pipelines.
Yeah, including oil pipelines, and so, of course, we strongly support the Standing Rock battle and others to protect indigenous communities and frankly, to protect all of us.
Well, thank you, John, for your really good work. Keep it up. We're going to be following what you're writing. Do you want to give us any preview of something coming up soon that we'll be interested in?
Well, I don't have anything immediate. I just actually had a piece yesterday with the publication Tikkun, which is a national progressive Jewish magazine. I wrote a piece actually about the experience that I had 46 years ago in Cuba. It's a rather different piece from some of the sort of stuff that I write, but I try to go into a lot of directions. I'm hoping to write more along the Make America Beautiful line, perhaps even a book, and also following through on the backpacking theory. And I will be going to Dubai, sort of the world capital of affluenza, sadly, but I was invited to go there next month for an international conference on happiness. The invitation came from the government of the United Arab Emirates. So it's interesting to see that in some of the countries where we would least expect it, people are starting to think about how do we get away from the growth model and to start measuring things, instead of GDP, start measuring things like happiness and well-being and figure out how to solve some of those problems. So that's exciting, and I'll certainly be writing about those experiences.
Is that what you meant by the title of your recent article, Stop Fixating on Economic Growth? Let's talk about quality of life?
Exactly. And it's ironic that some of the places that are starting to do that, my friend Laura Musikansky and I, she runs a thing called the Happiness Alliance, that's happycounts.org, and she's also now working with the whole country of Kuwait in a national survey of well-being and happiness to influence their national policy. So it's very interesting that some of these Middle Eastern oil-producing countries realize that this oil boom that they've had that has made them very, very wealthy is a temporary thing, and that they really need to be looking to some different values and some different ideas. They've sent a lot of their kids with oil money overseas to study in the best universities in the United States, the UK, and elsewhere. And those kids have come back with ideas that they really want to change the country, and they wanted to care about something besides the oil and the money and the glitter. And that's pretty exciting.
Thank you so much, John. We'll expect a report when you get back.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it.
Be well, my friend. Bye now.
You too. Bye now.
You've been listening to my conversation with award-winning film producer and author, John DeGraff. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or on our Facebook page or the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click in window number 3. We've started a new service in 2017 called Simpler Living Sanity Suggestions. Amid all the changes in our country, we offer a new suggestion each week, not as a placebo, but as encouragement to do something for yourself, your family, your community that may counteract any negative stuff that may be coming or happening right now. The suggestions are given in the weekly nudge and our weekly digest, which together make up the Simple Living Works blog. Also, a link to all the sanity suggestions are given in the show notes. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for several months and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read on the simplelivingworks.org site. Click on your recent comments in window number 5, or see the link in the show notes. We've simplified our blogs for this year. The weekly nudge focuses only on the efforts of Simple Living Works. The weekly digest includes the latest posts from colleague organizations. Both come with a free subscription to our Simple Living Works blog. The much more complete, almost obsessively detailed monthly digest is now updated at least once a week and kept on the Simple Living Works site. Links to the monthly digest are given in both the Weekly Nudge and the Weekly Digest. We hope you'll check them all out, but we don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of help available toward a life of voluntary simplicity, which young adults now are inclined to call minimalism. As usual, I've lined up interesting thinkers and activists for this year, including author Cecile Andrews, Hazel Henderson, the co-founder of Ethical Markets Media, and Nancy Perlman, producer of Echo News. Well, time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works and would like more basic information, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. We're now also available on Google Play. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview Backup and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscription to this podcast and to our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity. Choosing to live simpler lives is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Come, everyone who has thirst, those who have nothing come buy. Why spend your labor for things that simply do not satisfy? Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. The bread in your cupboard belongs to one who is hungry out there. And the coats in your closet unused could warm up the ones who stand bare. so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. See how the wealth you acquire is born on the backs of the poor, whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need their own rooms lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. Learn how to live from the poor, their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. Be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.